Hello and welcome to episode 5 of Glimmer of Genius, all the latest MTG happenings right in your ear. My name's Luke and I make YouTube videos. On the line with me is Level 2 Judge Grant David and MTG trader Simon Wright. How are you guys doing? You alright?
I'm good. Suffering for a bit of deja vu right now?
Yes. Hopefully we've got through all of the technical difficulties and we shall be running nothing but smoothly. On the show today, it is all about Pro Tour Amonkhet. We're going to discuss the standout decks, go through the top 8, and have a look at the meta moving forward. Zombies, Marvel, Red-White Humans, and more are the topic of discussion on today's show. So then, first of all, Grant, what have you been up to this week in Magic?
I have been playing a couple of standards, FNMs, and I've also been brewing a lot of decks, actually. I mean, obviously, I've only sort of started looking at the Pro Tour stuff recently, and that's given me some ideas as well. But there was a PPTQ last weekend in Eastbourne, and there was a guy there running a deck which revolved around Drakehaven. But the reason it got my attention was because he built a deck entirely around it. So it was all about cycling, all about making drakes or whatever. And because of a judge question, which I then had to check and thought, wow, that's quite not broken, but very, very good, is if you run Drakehaven with obviously like Tormenting Voice, you discard a card, you can make a drake or whatever. Mm. But if you run it with Cathartic Reunion, where you discard two cards, the question obviously was, what can I pay one to get one Drake, or can I pay one twice to get two Drakes? And the answer is you can pay one twice to get two Drakes.
Nice.
So he was doing stuff like, you know, turn three or whatever, you know, making 2/2 flyers, just flying over stuff. He was doing things like at end of turn, cycling to draw a card, make a Drake, and it was just really good stuff. So I've been brewing like 3 different colour alternatives to making a deck all around Drakehaven because I really enjoy it. Nice. It does mean going a bit too control-y for my liking, but I want to give it a go, similarly to, well, some of the other decks in the Pro Tour, which are a bit more control-y, or this new Perspectives deck, which we'll talk about later. But I like brewing some of the new cards at the moment. But other than that, I've just been playing a bit of FNM all Monday. As you saw, I've been playing that Humans deck I talked about last week, which was, it's been good. I've made some changes to it because it was a bit inconsistent. And we're struggling with getting the right colour mana because it needs to play, obviously, stuff guaranteed turn 2, turn 3. So at the moment, it's running a human, which actually is not bad. It's called Aether Chaser. It's red and 1 for a 2/1 first strike, and it's that one where you can pay energy and then you make servos. So she's primarily in there to, when she comes in, give me 2 energy to run my Aether Hubs. But actually, I found myself, when she got powered up by Thalia's Lieutenant or Metallic Mimics, just having a big creature with first strike was actually really good.
Yeah.
So I'm actually really enjoying humans at the moment. So I'm gonna carry on playing them in standard. But at the moment, it's quite good against zombies. The Dusk Dawn takes people by surprise, and Lone Rider, which no one knows really what it does until they see it, is making me laugh because a big life-linking, trampy, first striking creature is quite fun. So
yeah,
having fun with humans and trying to brew a Drake deck, I think, is the way to summarize.
Simon, what about yourself?
I've been playing new Amonkhet League. Our local shop owners are both very big on League. They quite like it, gives them a chance to play.
So how does the League work?
How
does this League work for people that are jumping in?
So when you start, you get 3 booster packs and you have to make a 30 card deck, and it's best of one round, one game, and everyone gets 1 free mulligan. Mm-hmm. Just to basically nice and quick, get a lot of rounds in, have some fun. If you ever lose 3 games, you get to add a pack, and every week you can add a new pack to your card pool as well if you wish. My first 3 boosters were all white rares. I had a Regal Caracal, the cat that makes other cats.
Mm-hmm.
Gideon's Intervention, odd, difficult bit of removal, and Approach of the Second Sun. So I thought it was quite good in a 30 card deck. Got a win at some time.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, the rest of the pool wasn't great. And I splashed it at green, but mainly just for Greater Sandworm and the Crop Champion, the one that untaps all your other creatures if you exert it.
Oh, yeah.
Nice.
And I was also running Greater Sandworm as well, though. So technically I had 3/7 drops in my 30-card deck. So not great on my part, really. I quickly got thrashed. I think I lost the first 4 games in succession. So went and got another booster pack. Still didn't do too great. I went 6-4 that day. 4-2, sorry. 2-4. 1-2, lost 4. And then week 2, though, I opened a Plague Belcher.
Oh, nice.
Ooh. So I sort of switched into more zombie because I already had 1 Binding Mummy and opened a 2nd one as well. And I had a Fan Bearer and I had a few other zombies as well, along with the white instant removal spell, Time to Reflect, which is an exile target creature that blocked or was blocked by a zombie this turn. Yeah, I'm surprised they're not running it in the white deck.
I know. That's what I'm surprised by as well. It's really good removal.
I was thinking about this only today, and I thought, you know what? It felt to me like one of those things that, you know, you kind of have an idea sometimes, but you just think, oh, no, it'll be crap and people won't believe it to be good, so you just don't bother. Do you actually think that would be pretty sweet?
I really like it. Exiling is really strong.
Mm.
Yeah, well, if you're running all zombies in the zombie decks, which we'll get to later, I don't see why. I guess they could decide not to block, but
like, imagine you're playing against Marvel and they've done all the Morg and, you know, they've exiled some zombies, you know, you've got like three left or whatever, and they go, okay, your turn. And you go attack with these zombies, you know, they're probably not going to no one really knows what that card is, particularly if they're high level play. And they go, oh yeah, sure, block your zombie, and then you exile their Ulamog. Like, they're going to be super mad and lost the game.
It's good.
It worked well when I got to play it last week. I mean, so yeah, I've gone for more of a heavy zombie build out of my creatures. I'm running, I think, around 60% of them are zombies, and with the cat as a top end, and the Wind Shepherd, and a couple of spells, and that's it. Oh, I'm checking out the Grimstrider as well after your recommendation the other week.
I really like it. If you've got enough instant speed cards or stuff that can cycle, it's really nice.
Yeah, he did often come out as a 4/4 straight away.
Yeah, that's what I tend to have him. It was that 3/1 or whatever it was last time, where it was like, oh, him double blocked this 4/4 and then made it a 6/6 instant speed and kill one of their guys. It was just, it was crazy.
Brutal.
Yeah.
Took out all the 7 drops though for now. Took out the Seraph of Suns, the Brazen Sandworm, and approached the Second Sun. Streamlined it a little bit, played a bit more sensible. I went 3-2 that day, so 5-7 overall. No, 5-6 overall. So if I get 5 more wins in the next 2 weeks, I get a special die. It was 4-sided pyramid dice.
Nice.
I'm running the event, I could just take one if I wanted to, I guess. I feel like a cheat.
My magic has been focused on trying out my own sort of Reanimator / Aetherworks Marvel deck. It came about for two reasons. The first is I only own one Ulamog, and the second is I wanted to try and see if Liliana Death's Majesty could be really good in just bringing back stuff, just to kind of outgrind Aetherworks Marvel mirrors and things like that. So it's more or less the typical Aetherworks Marvel shell, but instead of the Ulamogs, it's just got one Ulamog, one Worldbreaker, an Ishkana, Demon of Dark Schemes, and he's pretty cool. And then it had a couple of Elder Deep Fiends as well to try those out, and then a smattering of things to allow me to put stuff into the graveyard to reanimate should it just clog my hand. Because one of the things I was concerned about before, like, sleeving up a Marvel deck is just naturally drawing cards like Ulamog and wondering what to do. So it played a couple of Sinister Concoction, the one black enchantment, which lets you discard and mill one to kill a target creature, Grapple with the Past.
It's quite a good idea. I like that.
Yeah. Also, I was trying out Catalogue, which I'm not playing anymore because I don't think it's good enough. And the Vessel of Nascency as well, which is fantastic.
Yeah, it's nice.
Vessel in the Aetherworks Marvel Shell is really nice because you can get everything that you would need out of it except an instant or sorcery. So if you accidentally get a Marvel in the grave, you can go, oh, I'll take that. So that's quite nice. And the games I lost, the games I've lost consistently were against Rise of the Second Sun control, which is annoying.
Was that proper control? Was that the cycling one?
No, it was a proper control deck. So it was basically Sensor, Glimmer of Genius, Counterspell, more Counterspells, cast out.
Because they were only running 30 cards.
No.
So, League's the way to go.
Yeah. No, I just couldn't do anything about it because they are able to just counter Marvel very reliably. And so you can't just slam out turn four to the point where they just kind of slow me down enough to cast multiple Rise of the Second Suns, which is quite depressing. But I think from playing it, I think the deck was trying to be a bit cute, and I think that just the basic team that ever works playing is just better. But I had a lot of fun with it, and I still might potentially try and squeeze a Liliana Death Majesty in there because she is powerful. The fact that you can just play her and then recast something effectively is really nice. The thing was really good against aggro decks. Like, it would come down, kill multiple creatures, get you energy back, and then you can either threaten to recast stuff off of Aetherworks Marvel because you just got energy back, or you can just recur your creatures. When I had Aetherworks Marvel in play, and then cast Demon of Dark Schemes, you kill a couple of your own Servants of Conduit, or maybe a Thought Token here and there, So you get energy for them dying off the demon, and then you get energy for a permanent that you control leaving the battlefield from the marvel as well. So you'd have, you know, kill a couple of things, all of a sudden you're back up to 6 energy again. So
that was quite good. Cool.
Yeah, but I don't know if it's... I don't think it's better than just casting Ulamog, which is sad, but...
But it's nice to mix it up a bit and have different routes, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And it might be that someone makes a better deck that has those cards in it. I know Reed Duke and a couple of other people in the Pro Tour, they didn't top 8, but they had a Soul Tie Aetherworks Marvel list, and it played along a similar line. Essentially like a Delirium-style deck, Demon of the Dark schemes.
Mmm, salty.
Yeah.
Let's go see what the actual pros are playing.
The biggest thing that we want to talk about this week is none other than the Pro Tour. Jerry Thompson did very well over this last weekend and won with Mono Black Zombies. There were some other decks in the top 8 as well. In my opinion, quite an interesting top 8. I'm not going to go over all the decks and all the things in masses and masses of detail because I think it was very well covered, and I was just actually finished watching a YouTube video. I don't know if you're familiar with the professor on Telerion Academy, but he's quite a renowned YouTuber, and he was saying something like 40,000 people actually were watching on the Twitch streams, which...
No wonder I couldn't watch it.
Yeah, which was pretty impressive. They seem to be going from strength to strength in their coverage quality, which is quite good. There was a lot of dead air on there with the transitions between certain matches. I only watched a little bit, but there were times where you were just watching a picture of a card for a few minutes while they were probably taking a lunch break. But beyond that, it was very, very good. The quality was very, very high, which is good to see because obviously the Pro Tour being their premier event, promote the sets and all the rest of it, it's good to see that they're actually doing a very good job of covering it.
I've noticed there seem to be a lot more adverts during this one. Like little breaks, like usually between rounds when they're waiting for players to shuffle up and go to their next match, they'll go to other tables. But the small bits I did see, that didn't seem to happen. I don't know if that's just when I watched or not.
No, I think it's difficult because I know in the past they've received criticism for going to other people playing matches because sometimes, sometimes they don't always show another match being played. It's just some people shuffling and some more shuffling and then more hands. And then they don't really time it very well. But
no.
I do prefer going back and actually watching something. And one of the things that was said on this sort of general feedback video I watched was it would be good to see like other content creators maybe getting involved and doing stuff just to kind of fill the gaps. But I actually think, just like you said, more games between the coverage, because it is interesting to see what other people are playing, because you might not be that overly fussed about that deck being shown at that time.
All I took away from it was the headsets and microphones they get the players to wear now. That seems to be quite a new addition. And I was just thinking, oh, that must be what I look like at home doing this podcast. And it's all sad.
I did wonder why they were doing that. Did they explain what the hell that was all about?
You can't lie to a judge if you think it's all been recorded, can you? Maybe that's what it is. Wear this headset, we're recording everything you say.
Oh, that's true.
No, judge, I didn't say that. Are you sure?
All calls are recorded.
Yeah.
Actually, I did hear them. There was a bit of interaction between the players. Oh, that so-and-so said this. They shook hands or whatever. So maybe it's more for the commentators to hear what's being said rather than actually. But anywho, so just to quickly run down the top 8 deck lists, all of this is available on the Wizards website. I will post a link in the show notes below if you want to look at the lists in massive detail or see who piloted what. So there's two zombie decks, 3 zombie decks, 1 green-black energy, and then the rest of the decks were Teemer Aetherworks, or some sort of Aetherworks-Marvel combination.
Most importantly, no Mardu vehicles in the top 8.
No.
Yes.
So quite relieved after our last podcast when I was all down on the SCG Open. But yeah, and it was quite a shock since it made up 25% of the starting field.
Yes.
And not to get a single entry in the top 8. If you're going to the Pro Tour and you know Mardu Vehicles is the deck to beat, then I'm guessing you're going to you either play it or you play a deck that's going to beat it.
Yes. And looking at Yuya Watanabe's deck, his team at Aetherworks deck, to go on your point there, he's playing 3 main decks, Dissenter's Deliverance, which is the 2 mana instant speed destroy target artifact, and you can cycle it for 1 green.
What, in the main board?
In the main board.
Oh, blimey.
fair.
One cause of extra turn, main board, and three sensor. So if Mardu Vehicles is trying to curve out and hit you in the face, then cards like that are going to be very, very good at just stopping that.
Yeah.
Do you think that Marvel has done less well because people expected that to be the meta and have prepared themselves and stuff like that, or the decks they wanted to run, like Mono Black Zombies or whatever, are just better? Or do you think they are just better decks now?
Sorry, do you think that Mardu or Marvel, did you say?
Oh, sorry, Mardu, yeah.
Mardu, okay.
Well, Marvel as well, actually, because that's quite popular as well. But do you think the reason these other decks are coming through is because they've sort of gone like an anti-meta approach, or is it just you think they're newer, better decks now?
I was surprised by it, but I think Zombies is actually just a very good deck. Because of the fact that you can recur your threats, the massive tempo swing that can be gained through Dark Salvation against other fair creature decks, that's just a good thing to be doing. Diagraph Colossus can sometimes be in excess of a 5-5, depending on how you've sequenced. And I just think that being a very good deck, it probably actually did very well against things like Mardu.
I think Aetherworks Marvel beats Mardu Vehicles, but it could never beat Copycat.
Yeah.
Hence why it didn't see a lot of play. But now with Copycat being out of the pitch, I think you can see, actually, Marvel and Mardu Vehicles both had 25% of the decks, of the starting decks. And Aetherworks got 5-4 into the top 8 and Marvel 0. So I think that alone sort of demonstrates that Marvel beats Mardu Vehicles majority of the time.
I don't know the exact numbers. And again, there are some really good articles on the Wizards website, I think by Frank Carsten. Okay, I'll post the links in there. But where they talk about the day one and day two metagame breakdown, and they were discussing, he's basically saying that the conversion rate of Marvel compared to Mardu was just so much better. And the conversion rate, if you're not familiar with that, is basically how many of the decks that appeared, or the deck archetype actually, then making day two. So you look at the Marvel variants that there were, and it had a conversion rate of 71%. So if you were playing a Marvel deck, you'd have 71% chance that you'd make day two, is one way of looking at it. Whereas compared to Mardu Vehicles, the conversion rate was 58%. So if you were playing that deck, you had a quite a significantly less chance of going through. Or rather, the decks that were played just didn't make it to day two as much as the Marvel decks. I'm not sure how much of it is oops, I win, you know, just by rolling out a turn four Marvel and going nuts with Emrakul. But I think the deck does have a lot of also natural kind of...
I doubt they went nuts with Emrakul.
Ulamog. But the deck also does really well at just playing a really good mid-range strategy as well, like with all the Virtuosos and...
So this is the thing, because I agree, because, I mean, I've faced, what, Marvel at probably, say, three events since Amonkhet's come out, and I've yet to have it ever go off first or even second attempt at spinning down Marvel, to be fair. And every time I've been beaten by it, sure, it's been an Ulamog, but it's never been, like, first or second, so I definitely agree with you that it's not just because it does it early, because from my experience, it doesn't seem to be that consistent with doing it first or second time.
No.
Yeah. I was hearing people playing Charge of Flamecaller in the new Marvel builds.
Yes.
People hitting Ulamogs and Charger off of their Aetherworks, but nice. Sometimes choosing Charger over the Ulamog.
Interesting.
Which says a lot.
So basically, you need a board wipe because that's going to be really good against zombies, isn't it? Well, not bad against zombies, is it? If you can kill them all rather than just exile two of them. That's good, actually, because obviously the deck has been slightly limited as of Emrakul being banned because you've got less targets, and as I said, that seems to be an issue with them not being able to hit it. But yeah, with Flamecaller, that's quite nice. I like that idea. I haven't seen that.
Yeah, that is really cool. There's actually quite a lot of different... I mean, if you sit there and really study the top eight, there is quite a lot of difference in the cards. Not just a case of some decks are playing two World of Virtuosos, whereas some decks are playing four World of Virtuosos. You have, like you say, one deck is playing four copies of Chandra and other decks are not playing any copies at all. And then you've got things like Aether Meltdown as well, which is the 2-mana flash in, give something -4/-0, you get 2 energy.
Yeah, so I like that one.
Extra copies of removal, also putting the energy plan in. I think it's quite solid as well. And you've got some people playing Magma Spray. So there is a lot of variation in how you can actually build this deck. Main deck Tireless Trackers and all sorts of variation on the number of Ulamogs as well. What kind of plan that people are going on, and 4-mana Chandra as well. So it's really, I think it's quite difficult to actually play against this deck as well. This is to kind of answer what you're saying before, is, you know, if someone goes turn one attune with Aether, or turn two with Weaver's Puzzle Knot, you can sit there and think, right, I know a lot of the cards that they're going to play, but you can just be caught out. If you're thinking, right, I'm going to play around, if they Aetherworks Marvel into Ulamog, but then they Aetherworks Marvel into Chandra Torture Defiance or Chandra the Flamecaller, that's quite a lot of different cards you've got to kind of prepare for. That could just kind of spring out of nowhere. And playing around any one or two of those things is one thing, but like, you've got all these different kind of threats, it's really difficult. I think that might have added to why this deck was doing so well, because you've got to fight on quite a few different axes to actually have a hope. You can't just sideboard in Lost Legacy. And I know they were talking actually about that in the finals. One of the things LSV and Marshall Sutcliffe were chatting about in the commentary was I think Jerry, I can't remember if he didn't bring it in the end, but they were talking about the fact that he might not bring in Lost Legacy against the Aetherworks Marvel deck, because it's just they've actually found that even after they've committed to their deck list, that Lost Legacy just isn't a good sideboard card against Aetherworks Marvel.
See, I think that's why I want to run, is it Dispossessed, the artifact one instead?
Yeah.
That's what I would want to run, and I think all the decks I've got that have got black in, I've now replaced Lost Legacy with that card, because now the copycat is not a thing. And obviously with this, you remove Aetherworks Marvel, that's a lot more significant, and I'm not quite sure why people aren't doing that.
I think part of the key thing as well is, even if someone goes, right, Lost Legacy removes Ulamog, they can still just win with all their creatures.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, I just think it's a very hard deck to attack in a very meaningful way compared to something like Mono Black Zombies, which might transpire, kind of falls by the wayside a little bit if people are starting to play more cards like Magma Spray or Flaying Tendrils, Yuhenny's Expertise. You see more cards like that to just kind of... It's a lot easier to beat that deck with those kinds of things, or even Anguished Unmaking.
Yeah, because it wins in one way, doesn't it?
Exactly, yeah. But I thought it was really, really interesting. I don't know if either of you saw any matches in particular.
No, I'm really bad. From a business perspective, I should watch all the standard matches, but I prefer watching the drafts and the limited portion.
As long as it's certainly spiked, so I agree with you in terms of it being relevant.
Yeah, so I don't have to watch the games for that though. Unfortunately, I watch some of them, but I prefer watching the limited matches and the drafting. Yeah, unfortunately, most people talk about Pro Tour, they want to talk about the new standard decks, which is understandable.
Yeah.
But for me, it's all about. And it was interesting that because the set was released online earlier this time, that the pros had a lot more time to draft it. I think they're getting in like 30 to 50 drafts online, some of them.
Yeah.
So it's a lot interesting to see the draft videos they do where they film it live. I can't remember the terminology for it now, but because quite often I used to watch it and go, well, that's a bad pick. What are they doing that for? And it's just because they haven't had enough time to practice it fully. This time it was a lot more aggressive. And it was the decks they'll put together seem to be, or the picks they're making seem to be a lot better. But you don't get much coverage on that, fortunately.
How does it show them picking? Have they got like a... What's the camera angle?
Oh, yeah, sort of like a camera over their shoulder sort of angle. Oh, okay. And when they're doing it, they are sort of aware that they're being filmed. They do it a bit lower. Yeah. Not always, though. It's hard to impact, but they do a good job of spreading it out and putting to the front what they're considering and then showing the final pick. That's really interesting. The problem they used to have with it was you used to have those videos, but then they weren't the people you'd watch and they weren't the feature match in the next round, which is a bit annoying, or at all. I think they might have amended that slightly. But yeah, it used to be quite frustrating. You watch someone draft and then not see how they performed with it.
See, I'm the opposite. I hate watching... I don't mind watching drafts, but I don't actually enjoy watching limited games at all. I just...
No?
No, I don't know what it is. I can't... My interest is just dwindles after about two or three turns.
Yeah, well, I'm the same. It depends on the matching stands, I guess. This would have been more... I would have been more interested in watching some of these. I have watched a couple just because it is the zombie deck. And, you know, I love... the zombie decks. I used to have a zombie deck standing originally in the Strad. Unfortunately, this one's performed too well, so I won't get to play it because everyone will want to buy the cards. In order for me to play it, I'd have to come like top 32 or something and I can get away with it. So instead, I'm going to have to play New Perspectives probably.
Okay.
Yeah.
Looks so fun.
I saw LSV doing a video on it, and if he's saying it's a tough deck, then it's a tough deck, then it's going to be impossible for me to play it. Yeah. I'll tell you that.
An interesting thing, because you're talking about decks that you like now, you made me think of the deck that you were playing, Grant, the red-white humans deck.
In what way?
In that I don't actually remember seeing very much of it in the Pro Tour. which I found.
The red white humans.
Yeah.
The only one that made it through last time was the one that Rano was watching and the vigilance guy, which I still need to test out actually, because I think that it technically is better. But I prefer my list just because it does the board wipe thing, which I think particularly with zombies, and I know from experience actually I consistently beat zombies with that deck actually. I think I prefer my build at the moment.
But you can outaggro them and then just out tempo them. So yeah.
Yeah, because the issue is although we do the same strategy, because they've got lords and I don't have that, or at least not ones that I don't do intentionally, or ones that I can, you know, choose not to put counters on or not play them or whatever.
Yeah.
When I do dusk, it kills their stuff and doesn't kill my stuff.
Yeah.
Which is interesting. And again, I think I've faced zombies twice probably since Amonkhet's come out. I think both of them were black-white, but each time it's beaten them, just because the lifelink has screwed them over, or, yeah, I've done a board wipe and it's killed them, basically. So I'm enjoying my humans at the moment.
Just checking the stats, it looks like there was two or three red-white humans or red-white exert decks.
Oh, okay.
Three in total. All three of them made it to day two.
Nice.
And out of those three, you know, one of them definitely is Craig Wesco.
Yeah.
And they've done a draft tech on his red-white humans, which looked really good. I'm pretty sure Wizards pays him to build a white Winnie deck on just in every new format. we need more decks. Craig, white Winnie,
The deck you're talking about, was it much different from the one that made top 8 from the whatever the last event was?
I cannot remember.
Just watching the Exert guy. I think it had like that Expedition Envoy, you know, the vanilla creature from Zendikar, that sort of business.
It had the 3-1 Exert, give him lifelink. The red white guy was the one that gives all your attacking creatures +1/+0 for Amonkhet.
Yeah, we've got that, yeah.
I can't remember his name now. I can't remember. But yeah, it's just all the normal red white aggressive guys. Oh, we did play one Hazoret.
Oh, okay, sure.
Once again, I think that's Wizards Grand. Put a god in, please. Put a god in.
I've heard mine. I remember the first time I brought that to FNM to play. After a while, I seem to have gathered about three people watching the match just because they hadn't seen half the cards that were on the table.
Well, actually, my interest was more because once you like Wrath, then you can just, you're just like drawing so much stuff out of your own grave.
Yeah, like three or four cards on average.
Yeah, which is insane. It's almost kind of like playing against a control deck and they all of a sudden they just get pulled from tomorrow and you're like, oh god, they're just refueling.
It's kind of like a similar... I kind of like that.
Yeah.
Because the straight white-red aggro thing, I mean, I saw when Mike was playing it at Eastbourne's PPTQ, he was doing the same red-white aggro list. I mean, it went long in a game against, I don't know what it was against, but it was against like a control type deck. And it just really struggled. And I was thinking, oh, in this situation, my deck would be a lot better because I've got some answers. So it doesn't just, you know, peter out, which is kind of what I prefer about it.
Yeah.
Is the answer a Jarny? Oh, no, not a Jarny, sorry. Gideon.
Jarny?
No, Gideon.
Oh, Gideon. I don't know. That's another thing, actually. We were expecting, almost like when Chandra came out, the Torch of Defiance, where you look at Gideon on paper and you think, oh, this is broken. And I certainly did. And we didn't see, we maybe saw a bit of it in Mardu vehicles. But I was expecting a full-blown Gideon Tribal, and nothing's happened really with that, has it?
No.
No one's playing them at all. I don't know what his price has done, but I assume it's gone down quite a lot.
Oh, yeah, it's going to go down anyway.
But, yeah, so that's really surprised me, because I think that is, again, like Chandra, it's the best Planeswalker I've seen in quite a while. Or, like, in a vacuum, I mean.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I just think Gideon Allies in the car is still better.
What is he, Gideon, what's he called?
Gideon of the Trials.
Oh, the truck. He's now under $20. Yeah.
No, still more than I thought it would be.
Started at 43.
Well, that's not a real price.
Yeah.
Speaking of prices, Simon, how much have the zombies kind of taken that sort of upward sort of direction?
Oh, they've all at least doubled in value.
Really?
The main one being...
Relentless Dead's above 20.
Yeah, Relentless Dead is now like a $24 card.
Shut up.
Again.
It won't hold that price, but it's currently, yeah.
Well, it always spiked. Every time there was a new set came out, it spiked above 20 and then went back down again. If you look at the graph, it's really quite funny.
Yeah, it's the deck everyone's been waiting for. It's the deck it's been waiting for. It's why the release of every new set, if you have a fair few zombies, everyone thinks, oh, zombie's going to break out, it's going to break out. It's been coming for a long time. Oh, Crypt Breaker as well is another one that's jumped. That's like an $8 rare now. Advantage. I'll tell you, if you're thinking of building one, you might as well just get the cards for both. You're not having to add much to it unless you're looking at the sideboard. You know, if you're on a budget, you could ignore the Gideon in the sideboard, the black-white version.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think Anguish Unmaking is big, and that was certainly the pull for the people playing it in Pro Tour. Binding Mummy, I think you can take or leave. Although, again, they were raving about that, saying, oh, that was really good, because if you're getting zombies in it, instant speed with Crypt Breaker, then you can tap down creatures before combat, stuff like that. So that it might be worthwhile. I mean, they were really liking it, but it's the sort of thing I'd have to test with to really kind of see.
This is the thing I don't understand with Mono Black. Obviously, if you're Black-White, you've got access to Anguish Unmaking, which means you can deal with stuff like, you know, Marvel and all the business like that. But again, you look at the sideboard for literally the winning deck, and it's, apart from, Lost Legacy, but then we said that didn't work. Apart from Transgress of the Mind, there's really not that much that deals with Marvel. And again, if I was playing Mono Black, I would have like four Dispossessed in my sideboard personally, just because I knew how badly I wouldn't be able to deal with Artifacts. So it seems a bit bizarre to me, but I don't know. What do I know? He won the Pro Tour, so...
The quickness of it, you don't have tap lands, you're never going to worry about mana. It just does that one thing very quickly and very well. And it might be that, as I said before, as you move forward, that's not enough to maintain its ability to consistently do well at events. If people kind of expect it, know how to play it, have the right sideboard cards for it.
Oh, I'm tempted to put the mono black version together. I think I've got all the cards still. No Metallic Mimics. Metallic Mimic I like as an honorary zombie.
So I needed one more for my humans, but now that it's gone up in price, I might stick at three. I like the Golgari Energy list just because it's got Bone Picker in it.
Yes, Bone Picker is the best card in Hammer and Care.
Yeah.
Shame it's not a zombie, right?
I know, yes, zombie bird. It's a zombie. Zombie bird.
It can be okay against zombies, but it just loses to Marvel. It's what I've heard.
But then this is the thing. It's green, right? So you're again. I'm surprised he doesn't take. It was Watanabe's deck, wasn't it, that had like main deck artifact hate. I'm sure if they did that, it wouldn't be too bad.
I mean, in the sideboard, this the green black one's got
the Manglehorn.
Yeah.
Lay bare the heart. What? Okay, that's a new one.
What does that do?
Target opponent reveals his or her hand. You choose a non-legendary, non-land card. They discard it.
That's pretty awesome.
It's interesting. I remember seeing it, but I didn't know people were playing it. Shame. Yeah, I think I'd have a lot more artifact hate in that board if I was him.
He's got three Manglehorn, though.
I'm not sure if that works. Like, that was relevant when Copycat was a thing, but that doesn't really... I don't know. I suppose when you play it, you kill something. Yeah, that's not too bad. I was thinking about the tap effect. I forgot it ate something.
Yeah.
Planeswalkers have the legendary rule, but they're not legendary cards, are they?
Neither. They aren't legendary. They have the Planeswalker uniqueness rule.
Okay, right.
Legendary, no.
So Lay Bare the Heart is actually really good.
Yes, it's a wider Transgress the Mind, in my opinion. It'd only be bad if there was a set with lots of legendaries, but no one seems to be playing very many. I can't really think of any legendary cards myself, apart from, Rishkar?
Heart of Kiran?
Heart of Kiran. Oh, yeah, because it's legendary, isn't it? Yeah, okay, that's quite relevant, actually.
I think, but that's the only one.
That is the only one. Yeah. And you can kill the stuff crewing it, or discard the stuff that could crew it.
Oh, and Ulamog, obviously, duh.
Oh, yeah, true.
Rubbish cyborg card. What's he doing? What are you doing in the top eight?
I like the Cub. The Cub is super strong. I was annoyed that I couldn't play him in a deck that was running him.
Yeah, this deck's pretty insane, actually, the potential threat. I mean, between Greenbelt Rampager, the Cub, and Bone Picker, he's got some pretty low-to-the-ground aggressive starts. But I don't think it goes wide as well as like zombies or red-white humans could, though. Is there anything?
Yeah.
And Heart of Kieran as well, which I've only just noticed. It's playing Heart of Kieran, which is pretty solid. But no Planeswalkers in the main. And Walking Ballista, which is pretty solid. That's always good. So, yeah, that was the top eight. One thing that came up throughout the sort of conversation, well, throughout the top eight, the last round, the final between Yuya and Jerry Thompson, there was a decision that Yuya had to. He had a mulligan decision, and he kept the hand. I don't know if any of you have heard or seen this, but it was really interesting to me that he kept the hand. Now, it echoes a conversation that I saw on social media about whether to keep or mulligan a hand with the Aetherworks Marvel deck. Now, I can't remember the exact hand, but obviously he knew he was playing zombies at this point in the day, so because I think they exchange deck lists and sideboards.
Yeah,
yeah, they do, yeah.
Yeah, so he knows what he's playing. But yeah, his hand was one Spire Bluff Canal, which is the blue-red fast land, Attune the Aether, a Harness Lightning, and I think a Kozilek Return. So I can't remember exactly, but essentially, that was the only land he had, but he had an Attune the Aether, and he had great cards for the matchup, essentially, is what I'm getting at there. And he kept the hand, and he just didn't draw a green source for far too long, and got smashed. And basically dropped a game of the finals because of that. And I was just wondering what, if that was like, what your thoughts on that were, because I was looking at it thinking, I know they kind of had these decisions where they got to weigh it up and think, well, if this goes well, I'm very favoured. If this goes badly, I'm not very favoured. And that's kind of how they look at it and justify those sorts of decisions. But I was looking at that thinking I would never have kept that hand. And
so your question is, would we personally pick a hand that is not very stable or not very main sort of, you know, what you'd normally play, but has a lot of sideboard answers or not, is your question, I guess?
Was he on the play or the draw?
Oh, I can't remember now. I think it was game one, and I think he was on the play.
What were the sideboard cards he had? Because obviously it depends, like, how much weight they have, kind of thing.
I can't remember if it was a sideboard card, because he's playing a Kozilek's Return in the main, and the Harness Lightning is good as well.
I think if he was on the play, then definitely not. If he's on the draw and he's got the kill spell and the Kozilek's Return in hand, I can see the potential. You know, you got your Kozilek's Return that's going to wreck his deck.
Yeah.
Does it, though? Because they just come back, don't they?
They do, but it's enough tempo, potentially. Because the other thing is he had a Harness Lightning as well, so he can kill early creatures and do it. So, I mean, the hand was good, apart from the fact it was... I mean, if the land was a forest and he could turn one and cast a tune, then he'd be... I would probably pretty much an obvious keep, but I just wondered.
He didn't have Marvel, did he?
No.
I think the way I... The reason that I wouldn't keep that hand is because I would say to myself, okay, cool, so I've got two things that temporarily kill these zombies, but of course the only way you win that game is you temporarily kill them and then you have to do your thing faster. So I think when I've had that situation before, like in Modern or Standard, whatever, where I've got a lot of sideboard cards, I have to ask myself, okay, cool, this sideboard thing slows them down, but unless I've got a way to win the game, it doesn't matter how slow they go.
Yeah.
So I think in that situation I would not keep it, because without the Marvel or, I don't know, something that's gonna get you it faster or get the energy for it faster for when you top deck it, I wouldn't keep it personally. It's a good question.
Yeah.
I'd have to see the hand.
Yeah, no, I wish I knew more of the hand. The other one that I remember a bit better, I think it was one of the rounds in the Pro Tour. Some people were commenting on it on social media. You may have actually seen it. So someone was playing against zombies and they were on the draw. They know they're playing against zombies and they've just mulliganed to six. And their opening hand is two Harness Lightning, to Attune, and a Servant of the Conduit, and something else that they could also potentially play, but no land.
You can't keep that.
No. You need to guarantee a green source, because that's, well, what, three or four colours. I don't think the chance of top decking a land, let alone the right colour, is likely. Yeah.
You can't keep it, but you got the Scry as well.
I don't know what world I could... It would be where I could talk myself into keeping a hand like that.
No, it's probably one way you've already mulled a six. You've got you could get a Scry. You're on the draw, and you've got the tune with Aether in hand. It's probably one of those scenarios where you might consider doing it.
If every land in the deck was green, I'd consider it. But in a deck that's three or four colours, just no.
Yeah, no.
Mulling from six to five is a big deal. Some people might say if you mull to five, you're not going to win anyway.
That was a lot of the arguments that were going on the on the post.
They said, having a popular opinion about
they were saying with that deck, mulling to five is not what you want to be doing, because obviously you've got a lot of pieces that kind of make the deck work together. So it makes sense to not go to five.
I mean, if you like, I've just got Watanabe's deck in front of me, so the chance of him drawing a land that's got the right colours is, what, like, almost 50-50? Like, slightly higher. Because you've got, what, out of non-green land sources, you've got an island, a mountain, a Shrine of Forsaken Gods, and four Spire Bluff Canals.
Mm.
And if he top decks one of those, which of course is good because he's got a land, but bad because it's the wrong colour, he's not going to then draw another land for another two or three turns where he can do, again, nothing. So I don't like that, personally.
No. I thought that was suspect. Well, obviously,
ballsy.
You know, ballsy, yeah, definitely ballsy.
Ballsy.
I mean, you see people get paid off for stuff like that, but maybe that's the difference between pro players and mere peasants like us, you know.
Yeah, pros don't need lands.
the best keep I've ever seen, it's not to do with Mulligan. Well, it kind of is, in terms of him having a choice to Mulligan and knowing what he was facing. The best Mulligan or not that I've ever seen was, it was a final of PPTQ. He was playing Boggles and the opponent was playing Affinity. And his hand was a Dryad Arbor, two lands, two Path to Exiles, and I think it was a Hyena Umbra and a Dawnbreak Coronet, I think it was. So normally you wouldn't keep that because you've got one creature which happens to be a land and has no way of protecting itself until you put stuff on it.
Mm-hmm.
But because he was playing Affinity, he kept it because he knew that the removal was going to be quite low, because I don't know if it played whatever that red shop's called, Galvanic Blast. But he kept it, played the Dryad Arbor, and I think turn two, I would have gone like straight away, play the white source, put an Umbra on it just to protect the land. But I think I can't remember what he did. I think he spent some more time doing something else or getting rid of a creature really early or something like that. And again, not only was it ballsy, in my opinion, that he kept his hand, but two, that he was doing what was the better play, even though it was really, really risky.
Yeah.
I think it was just that he knew what the opponent played like and what the deck was. And it was kind of funny. Obviously, I couldn't say anything because I was judging the event. But at the end of it, the Affinity play was just really salty. He was like, oh my God, like drawing two, you know, Path to Exiles, like, oh, just so unfair kind of thing. I was just thinking, like, those were both in his hand. He chose a bad hand because he knew that that was his facing. Yeah. Like, you don't know what you're talking about kind of thing. So, yeah, that was probably the ballsiest and, well, cleverest in a way. Keep that I've ever seen.
That's pretty awesome. So looking ahead then, after this dust settles from Pro Tour, obviously you've got Games Days coming up, PPTQs coming up. What do you think is going to be, I mean, are there any other decks or ones to watch out for?
New Perspectives.
New Perspectives.
We need to talk about that, I think, because that's an amazing deck.
From what I've seen, it's not going to work. I don't.
How dare
you? I just don't think, I've only seen LSV play it on his video, but I just can't see it. Not enough players would be good enough to run it.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay, I will post a link in the description to this deck. But Grant, why don't you talk us through loosely what the deck does? Because I'm not 100% familiar with all the cards in it.
Let me find the list for it and I will talk you through it. But yeah, you were saying it's just like a really pure sort of combo numbers sort of game kind of thing. And it's just, well, as we've already mentioned, just very challenging to play.
Yeah.
So obviously the crux of the deck is running New Perspectives, which is a 6-mana enchantment, which when it comes in, you draw 3 cards. And as long as you have 7 or more cards in hand, you can pay 0 rather than pay cycling costs. So that's what the whole deck's built around. So you build it around that and you win using Rise of the Second Sun, which, as you're all familiar with, is 7 mana. So basically the whole deck needs to survive to get 6 mana and 7 mana. Now, I looked at the list and was like, oh yeah, this is really cool. Like you play, you know, you ramp, you play that turn 6 and then you know, do the thing turn 7 or whatever. But no, apparently the way the deck should work is you get enough mana to do both Approaches to the Second Suns in the same turn.
What?
Which is just insane.
Okay.
So what you do is you run some stuff that ramps you. So you run this cycling creature that gets you a land. And you run Weirding Wood from Shadows, which is you put on a land, it taps for 2 mana instead of 1. So up until turn 4 or 5, you're playing ramp spells and you're playing Haze of the Pollen, which is just a fog that can also cycle.
Mm.
And also Traverse if you need lands, whatever. And basically, when you get to the right amount of mana, which is ideally 6, you can play New Perspectives and then turn after, or you can do it the same turn if you're being clever, is you can cycle Vizier of Tumbling Sands, which is that blue guy that untaps a permanent. Mm. But when you cycle, she untaps a permanent as well.
Okay.
So you get to your 7 cards. Your cycling now costs 0. You cycle her, untap your lands. Then you can tap them again for 2 mana because they've got that enchantment on them, or some of them do. And then you play that black card, the Shadow of the Grave. So you get all the cards you've just cycled or discarded back. Then you tap your lands for mana. do it again, get loads of mana. You do Approach the Second Sun, then you just cycle again to get seven cards down, draw it again, have the mana, play it again. It's insane. You have one of the lands enchanted with Weirding Wood, which means it taps for two mana instead. So it means you can do it. Well, one, you can get to six mana a bit faster, and two, as long as you're untapping that land as opposed to your basic land, you can get to that mana. One thing which is just absolutely, like, if you could make it even more insane, which apparently it can do, is if you know you're playing against a counter deck where they're going to obviously stop your Rise of the Second Sun from working, is you can run Sphinx of the Final Word, or it runs Sphinx of the Final Word, and then basically you cast that and then cast two Rise of the Second Suns in the same turn. You have to get a lot of mana to do that.
Yeah.
I've got a question since we're on the subject, Carl. What happens if you play Approach of the Second Sun for the first time, but you don't have seven cards in your deck?
Yeah. I believe it just goes to the bottom, although that seems like the kind of thing that would be on Gatherer.
I hope it goes to the bottom, because it works really well. It works really well in my 30-card lead deck. There's some way of winning there.
I like that idea. Okay, yeah, literally the second ruling. If you have fewer than six cards in your library, you'll put Approach the Second Sun on the bottom of your library. Otherwise, you'll lift up the top six cards without looking at them and place Approach the Second Sun underneath them.
Yeah,
so that's what happens. But yeah, so, like I said, you need 14 mana to win the game, because you play the enchantment, and the next turn you play Approach the Second Sun in the same turn. But if you're anticipating it getting countered, you have to get 21 mana to cast Sphinx of the Final Word and then Approach the Second Sun twice.
Mm-hmm.
I really want to play this deck, but I think it's bonkers to play.
Hey, the amount of times I get mana flooded, I can get to 21 lands.
The issue as well is I don't play control. But this is the thing, because a lot of bonkers decks I see do have that control aspect, so I am tempted to play this, but if LSV is playing, it's very difficult to pilot. I'm kind of scared to even get the cards for this and try it. Although it's quite cheap, isn't it? There's nothing.
It's a very cheap deck, I think, yeah.
So I'm tempted. Might give
but
it.
But it does have all the lands, though, which probably not. Well, they're cheapish.
Yeah.
All the cycle lands.
What's that go for? So what? Scattered Groves. Let's have that. So that's the white green one?
Be a few dollars.
Yeah, it can't be that much, can it? I mean, how are they? Are they popular? People buying lots of them, or?
No, the most popular one is blue-white.
Yeah, it's about three. Yeah, under $3 most of them.
Yeah, blue-white and red-green.
Might give it a go. I mean, that's not going to change. That's going to be legal for, well, until Amonkhet comes out, isn't it? Cycles out, so that's always a deck we can come back to. Unlike Zombies, obviously, is going to be going, well, not too soon, but you know what I mean.
Yeah. Well, quite soon, less than 5 months, is it? Pre-release for that set is end of September.
What's it called? What is the new set called?
Alice Devastation, the one afterwards. So the full set, that's when you lose Battle for Zendikar and Shadows Over Innistrad.
Hmm.
So we go from this massive format to a littler format.
Yeah, so it'll go back to 5-6. Yeah, this is going to be the biggest drop-off in one time. We usually lose three, and one of them is a core set, so it doesn't count.
It went back to 5-8. That's really weird.
Yeah, it probably will, yeah, because when we go back to October 2018, it'll be eight sets again. September 2018, it'll be eight sets again, and then you'll lose four, and then you'll get the fifth one coming. So, yeah, it'll be 5-8.
Okay.
And then 8-5. Yeah. Grant, did you listen to did you re-listen to the podcast?
No.
Last week, Luke kept saying about going on a wee break.
Okay.
I think he meant little. But it came across as P.
Weird. Oh, do we know, in the Welcome Deck 2016, it had like cards like Disperse, which actually were quite relevant in some cases.
Yeah.
Do we know if there's anything in the Welcome Deck 2017 at all?
You mean like Tattered Mummy?
Or any other exclusives that actually might be quite good, like Disperse. I haven't seen any of the new Welcome Decks yet. So.
The only one I picked up on was Tattered Mummy, and that's because Zombie was getting a lot of hype. It jumped to $3.
I don't even know what it is.
It's a zombie for two mana. I think it's a 1/2. Whenever it dies, opponents lose two life.
Oh, okay.
But of course, mummies are getting a lot of hype, and it's reaching $3. And I keep going on about if any of these cards ever break out in these welcome decks, then it's going to be like they're going to be like $5 for no reason.
Amonkhet, though.
Yeah, but it's not in the set. It's in the welcome deck.
Oh, it hasn't got its own symbol now.
No.
Oh, okay, because the welcome deck one had its own symbol, didn't it?
Did it?
you know, Disperse has a little, the little promo star and then a little 16 next to it.
You can tell them, you can tell which ones are in the welcome deck because the number will be
over
past, over the actual numbers in the set. So it'll be like 270 out of 260.
Oh, you're right. Yeah. Okay, so they must have just changed the
symbol. Yeah. So I went and bought like 20 tattered mummies for 25p each.
Oh, no, that means my humans are going to rotate out sooner than I thought. Oh, because I'm going to lose my lone rider.
You're going to lose a lot.
Should that be in the deck?
What?
Lone rider?
Yes. Oh, amazing. As Luke can attest.
It can do quite funny things.
I have made 2 5/5s with Trample, Lifelink, and First Strike on turn 4 before. That was fun.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
that does sound like you should play that.
Yeah.
Do you want to buy any tattered mummies?
Maybe later. No, the lifelink in it seemed really relevant. And also Ethersphere Harvester means that you can flip it over a lot easier than I did before. But yeah, like I said, it screwed over zombies, but just because of the lifelink. So yeah, it's good.
So that wraps up our summary of Pro Tour Amonkhet. We hope you enjoyed the show. If there's anything that you want to talk about or ask us, then find us on Facebook, Glimmer of Genius. You can also find all our other episodes at glimmerofgenius.podbean.com or by looking for Glimmer of Genius on the MTG Cast Network, mtgcast.com. In the meantime, thanks very much for listening and stay tuned for more.
I'll see you soon.
Cheers, guys.
Bye.
Bye.